Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I have a very special guest here today. I'm excited to reconnect again after a few years. And I know I just was told to introduce you, but I think it's better to introduce yourself if you're comfortable with that.
My name is Jennifer Yezik. I have a master's in health promotion management, and I'm currently a certified nutrition specialist. So I just work with people on trying to make healthy food choices.
And, you know, during COVID-19 times, yes, thank you. Nice to meet you, Jen.
You too.
During COVID-19 times, it's really interesting, at least my perspective of what I've seen around eating, where on my feed at first, it was like, you know, the concerns about the health and this and that and the other, until finally one of my friends break out and said, she was like, I'm eating too much, you know, I can't control myself. And that opened up, and that almost like allowed us to like share concerns about it, because we felt almost ashamed of the fact that there's this big health crisis out here, right? And here we are worried about our pounds, and here we are worried about what we're eating, and here we are worried about maybe we're eating too much, or maybe we're eating too little, you know, I can't control my sweets, you know, or something like that. So at first there was like this shame that came behind accepting the fact that part of the struggle of dealing with COVID-19 was affecting our choices with our food. So, you know, I'd like to see if maybe you guys have experienced that, if you guys have seen that and kind of like validate that. And I think as I use the word at the beginning, normalize that conversation and that idea behind, you know, and understand why that came out with COVID-19.
Yeah, absolutely. So 100%, I have been stress eating. And I would be hard pressed, I think, to find somebody that hasn't had at least one stress eating incident in the last, whatever, 8-10 weeks. I don't even know where we're at anymore. Classic COVID-19. Anyway, and that's exactly what we're talking about today, is the stress eating, the emotional side of food, because many people are struggling with this right now. And, you know, we can talk about diet culture, we can talk about mindful eating, we can talk about emotional regulation, we can talk about disordered eating. I mean, there's a ton of things that we can cover. We can't realistically cover it in, you know, the 45 minutes we have today, but we're going to jump on it. I'd love to hear from Jen, if she's willing to share.
Well, sure. So, you know, COVID-19 is this novel event, right? And it's stressful for us. It's not the event. The event itself is not causing, it's the stress that we have to sort of deal with. And it's uncontrollable. We can't control it. So we have to learn to accept, you know, that it's here. Our lives are changed. You know, we're in different places where we eat. It's just uncontrollable. But what we can control is how we cope with it. And I mean, me too. I'm home more. There's food everywhere. You know, usually I'm out. I'm not always near food. I have two kids that are constantly wanting to eat, you know, so it's making me want to eat just because they're eating. So it's just this whole new experience. And it is stressful. We have to, I'll put it out there. This is a hard time. And you're going to have to sort of work with starting to find those coping mechanisms that can help you get through it. And in terms of healthy eating, there's a lot we can talk about. I don't know how you want me to start, or if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. So no, I love that you just, you know, so openly said that, because one of the things that I personally sometimes struggle with, right, is like, I, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I already had all of this food in the day, and I get to dinner time and I'm like, I'm not going to have rice. The rice is a big item for us. We're Latinos and we're from South America. So rice is big for us. And I'm like, I'm not going to have rice because I already had rice earlier today, or I already had all these carbs earlier today. So I'm not going to have rice. But then, as you said, as a mom, I'm preparing the food and I'm making the meals for everybody, and there's rice available. So all this talk and all this, you know, empowerment that I was doing in my head just goes out the window the moment I sit down at the table with my family, because I'm not going to stop my kids from having, you know, all the different options and stuff. So for moms out there who may be having the same experience as you shared, where, you know, maybe I am thinking about these things and I'm trying to make good decisions, but then I'm exposed more to food because I'm feeding my kids, I'm feeding everybody else at home. What are some maybe strategies, or, you know, how can we stay in that place that I have in my head, right? That commitment that I have in my head, that idea that I'm going to do this, and just actually make it into an action.
Well, right there, you said something very important, because we can all talk and give you all these ideas and all these strategies, but if you don't want to do it, it's not going to happen. So you just said that, like, you're ready to act. So I think that's a very important thing people need to realize. You know, we can want to do something and we can give you all these strategies, but until you're ready to take that jump into action, nothing's going to happen. So just that's sort of like a background. And I will say, with any sort of behavior change, any sort of which healthy eating falls in, it's small steps, right? You're not going to tomorrow just eat perfectly. I mean, I'm not even eating perfectly, you know, so I would just say, you know, break down it into small steps, and each day maybe find one thing that you can really stick to for that one day, you know, one small step. I'm not saying, you know, eat 3 square meals a day and don't snack, nothing like that. You know, maybe just make sure your snack for tomorrow starts with a vegetable or a fruit, you know, instead of maybe reaching for what, you know, chips or something salty. Maybe, so your goal tomorrow is just a small step. Start with fruits and vegetables. Or for dinner, make sure, you know, on your plate, the biggest section is fruits and vegetables. So I think one of the easiest places to start is trying to get more of those fruits and vegetables, because we all know that they're so good for us. And it's lucky that we're going into spring and there's nice fresh ones at the store, even at some of the farmers markets are even open, you know, with restrictions. So I think one of the best things we can do is try to sort of gear our food towards centering on that sort of fruit and vegetable intake. However you want to do it, make sure you have one at breakfast. Or I'm going to make sure I have one at lunch, or it's going to be the biggest part of my plate, or it's going to be my main snack. I think that would be a good place to start.
And I love what you just said, you know, where it's like, just incorporate it, just make it non-threatening. Instead of having this big meal plan that you're trying to follow, just take little steps that take you towards your goal. Julie, you mentioned the word stress eating, right? And I'd like to really dig a little deeper on that and see if maybe we can unpack that a little bit and understand it, because I know you've talked about it in a couple of different shows. You've mentioned it, you know, about the relationship that we have with food, and we don't think about it. We just think that food is part of, you know, our lives, but we don't think of that relationship. And you've mentioned before that it's really key to have a good relationship with food in order to accomplish your goals. So I'd love to hear a little more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we look at like the pyramid of healthy relationship with food, and then we get into normative discontent, then disordered eating, and then eating disorders. So we start with normative discontent, which is about 90% of people are unhappy with their body. And this could be a number of different things. It could be weight. It could be, you know, whatever, their hair color. It could be the way their nose looks. I don't know, right? Your feet, whatever. Disordered eating, they estimate about half of us have disordered eating habits. And so this means you do not have an eating disorder. It just means that you have an unhealthy relationship with food. Not all the time, sometimes. And so 50% of us, myself included, I definitely have some stress eating tendencies. And I imagine this number is even higher right now with this disordered eating. And so basically what it is that you start to put your emotions into the food and you start using it as a way to cope. So we've talked about a couple of things just while you guys were chatting. I was kind of thinking about it. So both of you mentioned family. So we are conditioned that food is very social, right? I was just thinking about, you know, hanging out with my friends, what we used to do, you know, a couple of months ago, and we met once a month and they all came over and I cooked for them. This was like me showing them love and care and all of this stuff. So I was physically expressing my feelings with food and they happily sat there and ate them. Did they eat my love? I don't know. They might've just been eating the food, but we use food very emotionally in that way. Think about when you're little, we're taught, like when we're upset, we get ice cream, you did a good job, you get ice cream, right? And so we're taught at a really young age, we're conditioned that food is a reward, that it should be something that's controlled, punished, all these kind of things that go with it, right? So your dessert's taken away if you're bad, you get dessert if you're good. And this really sets us up in a really negative way to learn unhealthy patterns with food, basically.
I'd like to clarify the difference between eating disorders and disordered eating.
Absolutely. So eating disorders is only like 1-3% of the population. Numbers kind of vary. We don't have perfect measuring for this. This is somebody that meets criteria in the DSM-5, which is that psychiatry Bible, they meet criteria for an eating disorder, either anorexia or bulimia or EDNOS or eating disorder not otherwise specified. I can't remember what they call it now because they've updated, but there's this kind of catch-all. And so what happens there is that they're experiencing restriction or binging or purging around food, and that it's starting to, they may have some body dysmorphia. So they look at themselves and see themselves very differently than the rest of the world does. So this is one of the key features of anorexia, that they see themselves as really, really large, even if they are very, very thin, and nothing can convince them otherwise. And so this is the brain really kind of mirroring and causing this body dysmorphia. And there's often restriction, like intense restriction, and sometimes weight change, not always. And so the next DSM, whenever they get there, they're going to start removing the weight criteria, because that's been really detrimental to a lot of people with eating disorders, to be mentally having extreme distress. And then they get to a place and they're like, oh, you don't meet the BMI criteria for getting treatment, which is really, really dangerous to think about. So we're hopefully going to see a switch away from that. And most eating disorder centers that are like up to it and with it don't require the BMI anymore as a criterion for getting help, which is really important. So disordered eating is showing these unhealthy patterns, but not to the level of eating disorders, if that makes sense. So you may restrict, you might have a little bit of maybe some body dysmorphia where you're seeing yourself inaccurately. Maybe you're over-exercising, overeating, under-eating, maybe with restriction. And I don't mean if you have a medical condition that requires you to pull different categories of food out. But if you're somebody, and people are really not going to like to hear this, but if you're somebody that's following a paleo diet or a keto diet or any of these diets that require a chunk of food as bad, or you can't eat them, that is considered disordered eating. And I know that's really going to upset people to hear, but this is unhealthy because they're not eating it because they're afraid of weight gain, because they are, you know, restricting essentially. So it's bad food, it's not clean food, whatever kind of terminology they have. And I was laughing because both of you said good food, and you said, like, you know, you're eating it socially. And it was just, it's very funny. And until you go through a ton of trainings and you really start thinking about it, you all of a sudden are like, oh my gosh, literally everybody, myself included, talks about food in a really unhealthy way. And it's just very fascinating to see that kind of in a societal way. And social media is a whole other ballgame, which we probably didn't talk about. But yeah, okay. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah.
So elaborate a little bit more if you need, but.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that gave us clarification. So Jen, when, you know, with that understanding, when you are working with somebody, right, on discovering, and, you know, you've made me very cautious now, Julie, of, you know, good food, bad food. So healthy, I guess, healthy would be an appropriate way of saying it, right? So when you're working with somebody and you have this understanding of, you know, how our brain works, how our social pressures work, right? The body image and you know, the perfect ideal that we have of how we need to look or how we're supposed to look, right? How do you incorporate that into selecting, I don't know, meal plans, if that's what you do, or you know, just coming up to that, it's almost like to that recipe, right? That's going to allow your body to get the nutrition that it needs and set you in a good way so that you can achieve your goals.
So I think one of the things we all need to do is sort of go back to the basics. And this is me too. We sort of need to understand the difference between hunger and appetite. So hunger is that physiological, biological need that's telling us I need calories or my body's not going to function. And at that point, you don't care what you're going to eat because your body just needs the calories. You know, appetite, on the other hand, is sort of this desire for food. And it's usually that we crave a specific food. We don't necessarily need it. That's where those psychological sort of, I'm in a social situation. Oh, it's noon. I'm going to eat, you know, that sort of thing. And so what we need to do is go back to understand for each of us, and it's different for each of us, what true hunger is in our body. And I ask my kids this, I'm like, they're like, I need a snack. I'm like, well, what's telling you need a snack? Is your stomach grumbling? Do you have a headache? You know, it's different for everybody. Are you just, you can't concentrate? And so when we understand we have true hunger, that's your body saying that's when we need to eat. And those other times when maybe it's like 15 minutes after a meal and you think you're hungry, you know, so I would sort of counsel just, you know, we need to get back, understand your true hunger signs. Everybody needs to do that. And then if it is true hunger, eat. you know, satisfy that sort of biological need. If it's not, that's where we come in with sort of these mechanisms like, you know, have a drink of water, wait 15 minutes, see if you still, you know, think you're hungry, or was that it? You know, take a walk around the block. That's what I mean. I see more people outside, which I think is excellent, you know? So if you think you're hungry and you just had lunch maybe like 15 or 30 minutes ago, you know, go for a walk and see if the urge goes. But, you know, it all goes back to just really each individual understanding what true hunger is, and don't eat until you feel that, you know, that feeling in your body.
So, you know, with that understanding, something that's been really interesting for me, at least through COVID-19. So before this, I was in my mind, I had set up, and I know Julie's probably going to slap my hands here after I say this, you know, but what I was doing to help myself, because I know that sweets are something, one of the things that I absolutely just enjoy very, very much, ice cream, I've always loved it. So I was, before this, I was really very cautious of not really going for the sweets on my work days, right? So Monday through Friday, the core days of the week, I was skipping sweets, I was skipping dessert. I had made that decision for myself and I was able to do that. And then I would only have maybe one or two. And that's when I kind of like let myself loose a little bit, right? On the weekends. Right now that we're home, I finished lunch and I want something sweet. I finish dinner and I have something sweet.
Yeah, me too.
Right? So understanding what Julie explained to us, you know, that relationship with food, that it may not be, it's not good or bad, right? And what you just said, you know, try to assess what you're really feeling. How do we manage that part? You know, how do we make it so that it's not stressful? Because, well, if we are stressed about it and we are judging ourselves for it, then I'm just going to go and sit down and grab the whole bag of M&Ms and not sit down, just have it in one sitting, right? So what are, you know, strategies for us right now that we are home to implement everything that you guys have talked about so far?
So you said something, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot. So you were like, I don't eat anything during the week, and then I let myself go on the weekend. So
that is
not a healthy relationship with food, okay? And so that—
Yeah, I told you we're going to do this.
So we're, so you're restricting. And what happens with restriction is that you eventually can't restrict anymore and you let go. And then you end up overeating or overindulging or whatever. And I know Jen has a ton of like mindful eating, intuitive eating tips for you. So I'll let her talk in just a second. But my one tip would be that if you're craving something, to just have it in a very small amount, because otherwise you start to like obsess about it. And you're like, oh my God, ice cream sounds so good right now. Right. And my boyfriend has been making fun of me this whole quarantine, but we literally always have ice cream in our freezer. And if I run out, that's when I know it's time to go to the grocery store. And so I have like a scoop of ice cream when I'm thinking about it, because otherwise I think about it, I think about it, I think about it. And then I'm like, oh, you know, I've put it off for so long. I haven't. It's been like the day, right? But I've been thinking about it for so long that my eyes are like, oh my gosh, I need the entire tub of ice cream. And so I'll give myself like 4 or 5 scoops of ice cream, which is far too many, you know, to have in one sitting, especially when I'm just mindlessly eating it. And so mindfulness and not denying yourself your cravings is probably one of the, those are going to be my top 2 tips, I would say. So I love fish. That's been my snack of choice, but normally what I've been doing, maybe Jen will be proud, maybe not, is that I take fish and I take some carrots with me and I'm like cracking up at my orange snack or whatever, but I tend to eat my carrots first and then I eat some goldfish. And so I don't tell myself I can't have goldfish because I love them and they're delicious. And, you know, something about them just sparks some joy. I don't know. They're fun little fish. So I like to eat them. They amuse me. And I've built that into my like midday snack that I am eating now. So don't deny yourself the food that you want. Just be mindful of the portions that you're setting up for yourself. And then I'll let Jen take it away with some other tips.
Yeah, you said a lot there. So in general, when it comes to eating, you know, we concentrate on these tiny little, like say blips that you have where you just eat something you don't want. But what we really want to think about is sort of our overall eating pattern. And in general, if that is good, if that's healthy, sorry, I don't know what terminology there, you know, if you have a healthy overall eating pattern, these little blips aren't going to set you back because they're not your normal pattern. And right now it's a whole new world, you know, even for us, you know, nutritionists, it's a new world because we're going to have more blips. But, you know that when this is all over, it's going to be a new normal, but you will go back to sort of an overall healthy eating pattern. And that's really what you want to concentrate on. So like you're saying, having these little snacks, that's fine. Just be aware each day, be aware of, you know, sort of how much you eat a day. And if maybe that day you want to eat your ice cream earlier in the day, that's fine. Just, you know, remember that you did that and that it goes into your overall eating pattern for that day. It's hard because this is, it's so different for everybody, but the easiest thing you can do is going back to just thinking about why you're eating and what you're eating. You know, I'm eating because my body needs it. It's, it, you know, it's my fuel, it's my gas. My body won't run without fuel, and it only can come from the food I eat. So that helps me. You know, every time I have something in front of me, I think about, you know, is this going to help me? Is it going to make my body run better? You know, like, you know, with cars, you don't want to put gas in that's crudded up with additives and all that, because it's going to make your engine not run. Same with us. So if you can sort of think in that mindset, that might work for some people. It might not work for everybody. For me, that's what I do. Other than that, it's, you know, it's slowing down. Do tricks to slow yourself down. You know, my kids, my God, it's like, you know, I'm like, they're done by the time I even sit down to the dinner. So it's just like, it's thinking about things that can slow you down. Obviously, you've probably heard, you know, chewing until you've swallowed and then put the nut, you know, next bite in. Eating with your non-dominant hand. Really thinking about each bite, because if you do it, you'll see those first, you know, 2, 3, 4 bites, they're delicious, you know, but then after that, you know, your body sort of gets used to it and they're not as delicious and you might be getting full. So it's just slowing down so that you understand when you're eating, because you need the calories. And then as you're getting full, and then as you're getting fuller, and when you need to stop. So it's whatever you can think of to slow yourself down. Try to not be distracted when you're eating. I mean, with our family, you know, that's fine. Don't, you know, but just don't eat in front of a TV or a book when you're not paying attention, because then you're just, you know, eating and not thinking. So it's just really this whole mindfulness. And I'm practicing it myself. It's just slowing down, whatever you can do to slow down and really think about what the food is doing for you, what it tastes like, and if you're really enjoying every single, you know, bite of it.
I'd like to go back to something that you just mentioned, Jen, and you said kind of look at the whole picture, right? And you said if you are going to have your ice cream earlier in the day, that's fine. Just remember that you did that. Can we unpack that a little bit more? Because it sounds like how I'm interpreting that is like, it's okay to have, you know, everything in the day, but you just, it's kind of like you almost need checkboxes maybe. I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to understand that in a practical way that I can then implement into my daily life, right? Where you're saying you want that ice cream, you know, as Julie said, go ahead and have it, you know, have that one scoop, don't skip it. And then you're telling us it's okay to have it, but just keep in mind that you already did. So I want to try to connect those dots and see if we can come up with like a good formula that we can use at home.
Okay, there's probably a difference between, we're not talking about trying to lose weight here. We're just sort of talking about a, like an eating pattern, because there'd be a difference if we're talking about losing weight versus just sort of our diet. It sort of depends on how you keep track of what you eat each day. A lot of people do it by, you know, they sort of generally keep track of calorie counts. I don't sort of do that. You sort of know what you eat per day. It's again, knowing how much you eat until you're full, you know, at each meal. And if or if not, you need to snack. Some of us snack, some of us don't. So it's just sort of this eating pattern. And let me think about this while Julie goes. And it's sort of, you know, sort of variables and just kind of mixing them up and sort of stacking them back together.
Yeah. So I should kind of clarify, because of COVID-19, because of our quarantine, because of all of this stress, I've been seeing a lot on social media about people, like, they're sharing jokes and memes and cartoons and stuff about, like, they can't fit into their pants. And again, this indicates an unhealthy relationship with food and your body, because you shouldn't be putting that much emphasis on what you look like, what your weight is, how you're going to present. And I just want to give everybody permission that's listening. You 500% do not need a bikini body to, you know, be of worth. Your body is not an ornament. It is a vehicle, for going with this gas analogy that Jen said. So it is the way that you're getting through life. You do not need, you don't owe the world thinness. You don't owe the world whatever, makeup, looking some sort of way. And so just throw that out. And before you share those jokes and memes and cartoons, even if they make you giggle, really stop and think about what kind of message you're portraying to other people. Because when you break it down, it might make you laugh, but when you break it down and you look at it, you're showing other people that maybe they don't matter as much because of their weight, or maybe you are inadvertently hurting somebody else or yourself, even if you're not thinking about it. I hate these cartoons and comics and memes and jokes about weight. It just really annoys me to see them, because it's like there's so much more that you have to offer than how you look, right? That should be the least interesting part of you, is what you look like, I think. As far as incorporating it into your day, if we're going on the emotional side of things, I try not to eat my ice cream earlier in the day because I know that I'm always going to want something sweet after dinner. And maybe it's applesauce, maybe it's whatever, like a Reese's peanut butter cup, whatever I'm doing that day. But I try to save that for the end of the day, because then I think about it and I'm excited about it. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to have a peanut butter cup after dinner tonight. And so you want to just consider it with your emotional state. A lot of us have this 3 p.m.-ish slump, you know, about midway through your day, whenever you wake up. Hello, college students listening to this. So if you wake up a little bit later, it might be the 5 p.m. slump or the 6 p.m. slump. But we hit this part of our day, the natural circadian rhythm, that our sugars are low and we want something sweet. And I know Jen was always advocating for us to eat nuts and stuff at that time. And that's great. Do that. I've been eating trail mix at 3 because I get some raisins and a couple of M&Ms in there too. And then I also have the nuts. And so she can say yay or nay. I think she was excitedly waving there. So, but just understand your body emotionally, your ebbs and flows, because then you'll start to notice what's going on with your food, right? So I tend to always have to force myself to eat breakfast because I know I need it, but I don't feel very hungry in the morning, but I do get really cranky and crabby at 11 if I don't eat something the morning. So it might be a piece of toast, right? So emotionally, I know that I need this piece of toast. And so I sit down and I eat the toast, right? Then, you know, at 3 p.m., I know that I start to get fussy, cranky, my eyes hurt because I've been staring at a computer forever. So I get up, I leave, I go take a break with my trail mix or my goldfish and carrots or all three sometimes if I missed lunch, right? So you're able to just kind of plot and chart what you're doing throughout the day and check in with yourself. So when you're getting cranky, you stop and go, am I hangry? Am I mad about something? Am I hungry? Like, what's going on? And then you can kind of address that. And like Jen was saying, try some of the other stuff first if it's not hunger, right? So go for a walk, pet your dog, drink some water, I don't know, blow some bubbles, like whatever you want to do to have fun, if that's what you need to address before you turn to food, basically. Especially, I bought Doritos, Doritos and I have an unhealthy relationship. And so I was laughing because I bought this bag of Doritos and it was gone in like 3 days. And I was like, all right, well, you do not possess any self-control around Doritos. And I started with little portions, right? So I was like, all right, just put some in here and I put the bag away and I walked off with my thing. And then I was like, and I went back, right? And so that's what I needed those couple of days, is I needed some Doritos because I was stressed and this is how I was coping and I wasn't using my other coping skills. And so that's what was going on. And that's okay. It really is. It's okay to use food as a coping skill so long as it doesn't become your new normal. There we go. End of monologue, right?
I agree. I mean, that's not your normal eating pattern, is not having Doritos every 3 days. So that's okay. It's not your normal eating pattern. And I think you touched on also sort of knowing your emotions and food. One thing I do with my clients, like when they first tell me like, what should I eat? I'm like, give me a food log, you know, record what you're eating each day. And this might help answer what you were saying too. You know, record what you're eating, not just what you're eating, but how you felt when you were eating it. Who you were with, or were you by yourself, you know, just what you were feeling, what you were doing. That's a way not only to see what you're eating, to sort of see if you're making healthier choices, but also to see if maybe, I was here just because she was eating. And so I ate something as well. So putting it down on paper, that's one of the things research even shows, you know, is really one way to sort of understand what you're eating and sort of start making these healthier choices.
It really sounds like it's a personal journey, you know, and it really sounds like it's a personal relationship that we need to understand. We've kind of touched what I'd like to go next in our conversation is the pressures that we have, right? And the idea of the perfect body and the idea of you know, the perfect image, right? The body image, and how that also affects our relationship with food. Because I think that many times, even though we understand that there's a relationship there, we maybe deny it. And we personally, I have convinced myself that I want to make healthy choices because I want to have a healthy lifestyle and I want to be healthy. But if I really dig deep and I allow myself to be honest and vulnerable, I have to admit that a lot of it comes from the fact that I want to look a certain way. You know what I mean? But I mean, and that takes a lot of courage. And I'm being very, very vulnerable right now, you know, by admitting this on a live stream. But that's really what it is. I mean, it's at the end of the day, you know, I'm making good choices with my food. I feel like I'm eating healthy, having lots of fruits, lots of vegetables, you know, like a diet that has all sorts of different proteins. But I'm still not content. I'm still not happy. And that's coming from the fact that I still don't look a certain way. So I want to explore that because I think that for a lot of people, maybe that is the biggest struggle, you know, like what I am doing, where I'm making these choices, I'm exercising, but I'm still not looking like the images I see. And so there's still this sense of inconformity. That's even an English word.
Yeah. So this is that body image stuff that I was touching on a little bit earlier. Everybody, almost everybody, 90% of us are unhappy with the way we look. And many of us think that by eating healthy or good foods or whatever, that we will look the way we want to. And there's a lot of stuff in there, right? So like my feet are a size 10. I cannot change that no matter what I do, right? And there's a lot of parts of our body that we cannot change without like medical intervention and stuff. And so we need to first be aware that genetics have gifted us with some sort of body, and this is where we're at. We're not all going to look like these supermodels, and they don't even look like themselves. I highly, highly, highly recommend this documentary called Embrace. I'll post it in the notes for everybody if you want to go look. It is behind a paywall right now, but it's all about body image, and they talk to actresses, models, photographers, magazine editors, people with eating disorders, people with disabilities, and they explore what it means to have body image, and they're encouraging everyone to embrace themselves, which is why the name is there. This is where I got that quote that I just said, which was that our bodies are vehicles, they're not ornaments. And so again, you don't owe anybody some sort of way that you look. And this is very hard to break up with this idea. And I recognize that. And it's something that I still struggle with as well. And so, you know, a couple of things that you can do that are really easy is to start to recognize when you say stuff that would be indicative of what they call the diet culture, which is essentially this, everybody has to be thin and, you know, big boobs and a big butt or like whatever your cultural ideal is, right? Thigh gaps, whatever you've told yourself that you need. Men suffer from this as well. I just want to be really clear. They typically focus more on muscles than like actual body weight, since they want to be, you know, ripped with like the 10 pack or whatever. I listened to a really excellent podcast from three male actors talking about their most ripped scenes. And they had like starved themselves and dehydrated themselves for like multiple days in order to show this image of themselves. And so it's really incredibly toxic what these actors, actresses, models are doing. And they want to look good too. I mean, I can't even imagine people filming me on like a really large screen and then I'm up like 60 feet, like, and you can see the pores are larger, you know, than whatever your head. That would be a nightmare for me. But these guys are being dissected for everything. And it's just, it's really interesting because our ideal bodies are not even real bodies. They're Photoshopped. People are starving themselves, dehydrating themselves. So anytime I see a picture and I start to feel that like, ooh, ah, like I wish that I looked like that. And it's maybe not even that loud, but you look at this person, you're like, oh, wow, they're really attractive. And then you just kind of a little moment for yourself, maybe that you're like, I don't look like that. So first off, that's probably not what they look like. And I really recommend following social media that does not make you do this social comparison as well. So start to put these no diet people in. I really love Own It Babe, Body Posse Panda. And I follow Jennifer Rollin, who's an eating disorder therapist in Rockville, actually. And I follow these guys because it's a nice reminder to get that breakup instead of following actors, actresses, models, people that are selling their body, essentially, not really, but also really, they're selling their body as part of their job, right? So they're in this bikini and they're standing really strangely and their butt's like stuck way out here and their back is arched this way. And it's just, it's not the human body. So there's a lot of, I know that cognitively, we all know that people are like touched up and stuff, but when you're scrolling mindlessly, it gets really, you just get inundated with this kind of feeling. People that use social media on a daily basis, hello, right here, are 2.5 times more likely to have eating disorders and disordered eating habits. And so social media plays a really large part of our discontent with ourselves, with our bodies. And again, we have to remember it's the highlight reel, right? I don't post my bad stuff on Facebook. I only post the good stuff. And so if you're experiencing the full gamut of things and you look and you're like, oh, wow, Jen has just run a marathon and then, you know, fed her children these beautiful organic pancakes. And then, you know, so you're watching all this stuff go by and you start to feel less than, but Jen didn't tell you that she dropped, you know, coffee everywhere, that, you know, whatever, somebody ran into her car. I mean, we don't share the bad stuff that happens. And so you just always have to remember when you're on social media, this is not real life, I guess. Another monologue, sorry.
And I would just say, you know, think of it as a healthy lifestyle. Think of it as we have one body that's been given to us to make it through an entire life, from, you know, being a little kid where we have so much energy, you know, to being old, you know, just, and we have this one body. And so we have to find what's our motivation to sort of get us through that. And, you know, for me, it's like finding this motivational statement. And mine, it's just aging gracefully, right? From where I am now to when I get older. And so when I think about, you know, a relationship with food and that sort of thing, it's what I can put in my body that's just going to help me sort of, my body can work to its best throughout, you know, the next years that I have. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or not, but.
No, it does. And that's actually where I would like to go, because it's like, okay, so we understand and we have this relationship. So how do we put it all together, right? Where, you know, when we go to the doctor, one of the things that they always measure is our weight. And you know, they're always talking about that and, you know, trying to give us the healthy, I guess, that would be the healthy weight, right? This is your healthy weight. So how do we understand that without putting that social pressure on it? How do we unpack that social pressure off of it, as you were saying, Jen, to really achieve that healthy lifestyle, to really allow our body to carry us through our lifetime?
So there's a couple of quick things. One, if you are worried about your weight, if you recognize you have an unhealthy relationship with your body at the moment, you can request that your doctors do not talk about weight with you, because of, you know, you can be honest. You can say, I'm really struggling with my body image and I'm worried that I might, you know, develop some unhealthy habits. If we can avoid talk of weight and just focus on health measures. BMI was designed not ever to be applied to everybody. And so that is not an accurate measurement of health. So anytime my doctor says it, I'm just like, okay, cool beans. Like that, it means nothing. It's just a random number, basically, because everybody's body is so different. Like, you know, I've got longish legs, right? Other people have short legs, right? So it's just not a good measurement tool for health. There's a movement called Health at Every Size, which advocates for healthy behaviors, health measures that can be done literally at any size. You know, I have friends who are 100 pounds. I have friends who are 250 pounds. And my friends that are like 200 and some pounds are healthier overall than my friend who's like 105 pounds, right? The weight does not mean health. And that's something that we really need to work on divorcing in the medical field as well. That being said, of course, if somebody is really heavy and it's starting to impact their joints or, you know, their cholesterol or their blood pressure's high, like then of course those are related. I'm not saying that. It's just this idea that you can look at someone and go, oh, they're really thin, they must be healthy. That's just wrong, right? I knew somebody that was like 110 pounds and like 5'10 and like really skinny and looked good. And then she found out she had Crohn's disease. and that's why she was so thin. And so you never know what's going on. And so don't ever make assumptions on weight and try not to compliment people on their weight either, because you don't know what's going on, right? So if I had been like, wow, you look really great. She's like, great, thanks. I was just diagnosed with a, you know, terrifying disease. Like, what is that? You know, so just keep your mouth shut, right? We're not supposed to talk about weight with pregnant women. Just don't talk about weight, period. You don't know what's going on. I think I got off track again. Oh, aging. Our bodies change throughout life. It is unrealistic. Like I was cracking up the other day because I found some new wrinkles on my forehead and I was like, ugh. And I was like, why did I think I was going to escape wrinkles? Like that is a fact of life. Your skin is looser as you age, your basal metabolic rate goes down. I mean, there's just all this stuff that's happening throughout life. Your body's going to change. You cannot look like you're 19 or 21 or whatever ideal age you want. You're not going to look like that throughout life. And people that often desperately hold on to this 19-year-old self, we tend to look at them and think they're ridiculous, right? We've got this dude with all this really obvious fake hair, and we've got, you know, like people running around with all these different things going on. And you're like, that's not real. So this graceful aging or successful aging, I can't remember how you put it, is really the ideal for all of us, is recognizing this is our body for our life. It's what we have. We need to be kind to it. We also don't need to stop ourselves from eating something that's delicious just because we think, you know, whatever, that quarter of a pound of whatever is going to impact us forever. It's just, this is our body. We need to be kind. We need to accept that it's going to change just like we've grown and changed. We will get wrinkles. We will get gray hair. You may lose your hair. I mean, there's just so many right things that go on with our body as we age.
And I agree. You know, there's no one sort of body type, and we do have to work to that. But I just also want to point out, just you know, if a medical professional, you know, is asking to take your weight, it's because they're just know that, you know, our leading causes of death now, most of them are lifestyle diseases, meaning they're related to cholesterol, blood pressure, heart problems, that sort of thing. So we do have to keep that in mind. And I think that just goes to an overall eating pattern. You know, do your best to have a healthier overall eating pattern. And you know what that, you know, get your fruits and vegetables, your lean proteins, you know, try to maybe go meatless and substitute some nuts and seeds and that sort of thing. Do your best to get that. And if you're doing that most of the time, you know, you're doing okay.
It really is not about the number, is the message that I'm getting from both of you, but it's really about, as Julie was saying, it's not the number matters, is how the weight that you have is either affecting or helping your body and helping you move and helping you just continue to go on with your life on a regular day. And if it is getting in the way, if your body weight is getting in the way and maybe is affecting other parts of your body, that's when you need to start looking at it and incorporating, you know, what you just said, Jen, you know, eating more fruits, eating more vegetables, you know, just really looking at that relationship that you have with the food and finding that balance so that you can help your body continue to function and carry you through the lifetime. I know we want to close this in a timely manner, but I would love to finish this because it's a lot, you know, it's a lot. And this is a big stress talk for a lot of people. And I forgot to give a warning at the beginning of our conversation today, but I know that a lot of people are feeling this right now at home. So I'd love to finish our conversation with a positive message, with some words of encouragement for everyone who is at home. And it's really, you know, worried about everything, but on top of that is really having a lot of stress about their food and their choices with food. And that, you know, just, you know, if you guys can shed some light for everyone at home who is really worried about, what am I going to look like? or like you said, Julie, how am I my pants going to fit, you know, after quarantine is over?
We don't owe the world fitness. Your body is the least interesting thing about you. Do not worry if you need to go up a pant size, down a pant size, up two, down two. It's not going to be the end of the world. You should focus on keeping yourself safe and healthy as much as possible. And so if that means you need ice cream every day to cope with the stress, that is okay. It's going to be okay. We can worry about looking at weight and potential health impacts of that later. For now, you need to keep yourself mentally well to get through what we're doing. Okay.
I just always end with, think of one small step, one tiny, tiny change you can make that will lead you to a healthier lifestyle. And that's as simple as adding one fruit today, or it's as simple as chewing 10 times between bites at dinner. Just something small, one small change, and those will add up.
I love what you said earlier. I had heard the chewing slow. I had heard the drinking water. I had heard adding more fruits and veggies. I had never heard eating with your left hand. So I think that I'm actually going to give it a try and see how that goes and see what it does. Because I can see some fun challenges with that one and just reaching my actual mouth instead of my nose or my eye intentionally. So thank you both so much for taking the time and joining me today. I really appreciate it. And thank you everybody for watching. Again, this will stay on our page. So if you need to listen and watch again, feel free to go visit our page. If you feel that somebody will benefit from the information, please share it on your pages as well. And it also go on our podcast page. So if you're driving and you don't want to have the video go in, you know, just know that this will go on Healthy Minds podcast. So you have just the audio part of this conversation. Jen and Julie, thank you so very much for giving us permission to love ourselves, you know, wherever we are today, and for understanding and, you know, that we just need to build a relationship, a healthy relationship with food, and understand where and how to do that. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.